Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the world according to Velvet. I forgot who I am and what we're doing here. This is Velvet reporting live from planet Earth for another freaky, free-flowing, free-forming Friday with fantastic friends. How's that for a bunch of F's? Anyway, if I disappear, it's because my battery is dead. So I'm just warning you, giving you a heads up that I was not organized this morning again. So anyway, at 4 a.m. this morning in Sadhana, I had one of the most wonderful surprises I've had in a long time. Who should walk in but my friend and cohort, Jen. And Jen is here right now, back from her journey. I don't know if she's back to stay or just back to recharge, but she's here, and I just want to welcome her home. And Jen, tell us some of the highlights of your journey. What in the hell have you been up to?
Well, a lot. But what translates to what we were talking about earlier, what translates a lot to Whitefish is the community work that I witnessed, participated in, and was very grateful to kind of become a part of in Baja California Sur in La Ribera with Kitsia Coco Palmana. And I think a lot of stuff that she is doing and probably a lot of people on Earth are doing is very important for Whitefish and this community, which, by the way, is very fertile, clean, and smog-free, which is very rare on our journeys. So, yeah.
So what have you learned about community that we can apply here?
A lot, but one thing that really stands out is the inclusiveness of community. I guess I'd love to tell stories, but maybe like, you know, one at a time instead of like it's very vague. But in a very vague overview, what's important to community is plants, children, elders and their stories, even if their stories are, this is one example, even if their stories are maybe depressing right now because the elders have been very overlooked in all cultures for a time, a long time now. And so what Kitsia realized is she started to get the older generations, the indigenous and others, to just begin telling stories to the children. She just hooked them up, you know, in a room and they started telling stories. And she went into the first stories that they started telling were actually kind of depressing, but it was kind of like a catharsis that both the children and the elders could go through together, that they were telling these, you know, sad slash horrible stories because that's what happened, you know, this is the things that have happened and no one's asked them for so long that it kind of needed to happen in a way. And then she witnessed over time, even over a few months, that those stories would begin to change and shift. And I think that that's one thing that's coming to my mind right now that's really important for us in Whitefish to recognize. Whether they're indigenous or not, we're all indigenous to Earth, and these elders need to be brought back into the community. And they're so easily forgotten, even in these new agey times, that, like, you know, we're all creating our own stories and we're all creating our own history. But to really look to the elders, I think, to open up about their stories.
I think you're spot on, and I think, I don't know, as a kid, for me, it's like I could spend hours listening to the stories of my grandmother, and even now, tell some of her stories, because she was so good at telling them. The other thing that I feel like my grandmother has in common, or had in common with Kitsia's philosophy, is the whole food. Food as medicine and food as connection and food as life and eating life. Do you want to share a little bit about the seed sanctuary and the potential here for seed sanctuary, especially about the whole thing that you said about the plants, what the plants know after a seed?
Yeah, so Kitsia had seed sanctuaries in many different places in Mexico and Ecuador. But the main philosophy that she has can be illustrated in a simple story, which is that we were talking about the California drought and all of this impending, you know, doom, et cetera. But the thing about seeds is, and she has over 4,000 varieties of heirloom seeds from all over the world. I mean, she had a neem tree in Baja, California, multiple neem trees. But anyways, so if you plant a plant and you collect maybe, you know, you plant like a row of plants or however you want to do it, and then when you collect the seeds at the end of the season, those seeds that were, you know, born of that particular plant in that particular season, that particular area, are perfectly attuned to what's going to happen next season. Because as we know, like, you know, you don't have to be woo-woo to know that Earth really does know what she's doing, and plants also know exactly what they're doing. So when you make suicide seeds, which Monsanto does, or you make seeds that, you know, are genetically modified and don't really have, you know, you can't collect the seeds at the end of the year is the basic point. And so when you don't do that and you continue to use a seed that hasn't, that you haven't collected yourself, the conditions, like I said, the weather patterns, you know, everything about your area and everything about how that plant relates to your area, those seeds that you collect in an ideal scenario are attuned to next year's planting season. So if you're in a drought year, well, then they're going to be seeds perfectly attuned to next year's drought and be able to grow in a drought because, you know, Earth knows what it's doing. Basically, the soil knows exactly what it's doing. Again, I'm not a scientist, but that's what Kitsia explained to me, and it makes complete sense. Now, when we start not saving the seeds, and worse yet, not saving varieties, well, then you have plants that aren't attuned to the seasons or droughts or whatever you want to say. And so then you have plants that are, you know, don't sprout or need a bunch of chemicals or whatever to sprout.
Well, and it sounds like, too, you also are encouraging biodiversity.
Yeah.
And because with, as I understand, biodiversity is there are certain plants that have, well, sort of like people, right? If we, if everybody was blonde-haired and blue-eyed, we don't have genetic diversity. Therefore, we also don't have the gifts of all of the races. And so by having just like, what is it, head lettuce, mm-hmm. you know, or that's lettuce that has no nutritional value at all. Iceberg lettuce, that's the, that one. If you have iceberg lettuce and that's the only lettuce that you have, people will start dying because there's no nutritional value from iceberg lettuce. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the whole idea that there are some lettuces that are more bitter and they're going to be more supportive of the liver and where some are going to be more cooling and they each have a different function and the more diversity we have, the better. So that's kind of, I think that's really a powerful statement to me about how this earth was designed, you might say. It was designed for biodiversity, mm-hmm. for life to continue. The other thing that kind of came to my mind as you were talking, you know, as a reflexologist, I open up the Akashic Records by working on your feet because according to the Kundalini tradition, the Akashic Records are below our feet in the earth. And so I'm wondering if somehow these plants have instant access to these Akashic Records. Any thoughts on that?
I definitely feel that that's true. One thing I wanted to address before that, which it kind of goes hand in hand with what you said, was just like, and because plants propagate way quicker than humans, obviously. The biodiversity is even more, I don't know what you would say, more, I don't really know what the word, viable, more intense, more in your face, I guess. Because, and it can also, like you said, blonde hair, blue eye, we wouldn't have biodiversity. And everyone knows that, you know, I don't really know what I'm trying to say, like, basically, the seeds, it's not even just about biodiversity, but the seeds are attuned. You know, when you're picking the seeds off of the plant and they, you know, they've grown into a plant and then the plant has gone to seed, like that's taken not just biodiversity, but everything. It's like it's evolving right in front of your face. You're allowing it to evolve with Earth and with you standing there. You planted the original seed, you know, you tended to it, you and the birds and just everything. There's like such a big picture, I guess, that went into that seed, which is really magical, and actually, once again, goes back to community, because if that's how we birth children into this world, and we really realize, like, oh, wow, they're in, you know, they're in the uterus, and, like, you know, everything matters, basically, not in, like, a purist kind of way, but in a way that if we just realize that everything around a plant matters when it's going to seed, and everything that we put into our bodies matters, and everything that happens around young children matters, because they really are our evolution. And if we treat that like, wow, like a, you know, the seed can be drought tolerant because it knows what's going to happen next year. Well, then what's the potential of children? Because maybe they are drought tolerant to in a certain extent. Like they already know the future. If they're really the seeds of the future, then they know the future just like the seeds and the plants know the future. So I think that's a complete analogy. And what you said about the what'd you say? Akashic records, yeah. I think that's very true. The roots and what's interesting about Kitsia's land is it's in a desert, but she's has 4,000 varieties of plants from around the world, and so it took a while for the roots to get down to the aquifer. But now that they're down there, it doesn't matter what kind of hurricanes or weather comes through. Her place is fine because she's tended to it, and she's babied it, and she's done a lot of work to make sure that these plants are well-rooted. So to me, the Akashic Records seems like that, maybe that underground aquifer that we all need to reach with our roots, and that maybe plants are doing it.
Well, and then so the other thing that kind of helped what you triggered when you said well-rooted, again, I think this whole idea of a well-rooted community. If we're well-rooted in our environment and we're connected to the cycles of the seasons and we're connected to each other, it feels like it is this community building thing that you brought back that I've sort of attempted at, but I think not that I've been exclusionary, but I'm waiting for people to come to me. I'm an introvert, okay? So you can't tell that, but the whole idea is that we have this community already here. And everyone in this community has really unique gifts, but there are a lot of people that are hiding in this community. They don't even know what their gifts are sometimes. But the thing is, we as a community must be rooted in our community and within our community. And the thing about plants, too, and I think of aspens as an example, and maybe you know more about other plant species, is that it is through the roots that these communities of plants stay connected. Mm-hmm. And I think as we root this community, you know, Jen has gone out into the world, the perfect role of the outsider in the Dharma type. She's gone outside of our community, and she's brought back some new ideas for community. And I think rooting ourselves in our community, understanding the biodiversity and the gifts that each of us bring to the table will allow us to weather whatever storms are coming, whether they're fiscal, whether they're climate, whether they're emotional, whether they're solar. We will make it if we're rooted in our community. And I'm really excited about what Jen has brought back, and I can't wait to start applying it. The other thing that's happening in relation to Jen and kind of our community is that there is an elder. He calls himself a headman, which means he has been given the rights to do a sweat lodge. And Jennifer's mother, Jen, ooh, that was very proper. Jen's mother has offered her land for this community lodge that John is going to build, and then it will be open to everyone. It will be inclusive. There will be traditional, it'll be with the Lakota songs, the Lakota Dakota songs, and those, that technology. He and I just talked about how Kundalini and the sweat lodges, their technology, and that's why it's important in some ways not to mess with the technology and not to mix technologies, but to make a short story long, this idea that we are creating community, and we're by building a sweat lodge, we're building a womb to birth our community. And then, I don't know, Jen, if you want to talk about some of the ideas you have for what you want to do out on that land.
Well, I think we don't have, like, a ton of time, but and we're still, like, integrating. I'd rather do that with Jacob, actually, like, as a show with Jacob. But I did want to comment on something. Like me and Velvet were talking about earlier, there's a lot of hurricanes and weather systems in Baja, California. And what's interesting about what you just said is that during one of these, Kitsia said that what she felt, because it was, like, flooded, she actually almost died because of a flood. She almost drowned. And so she was, like, hanging on for her life, and, like, she was singing songs, like, singing indigenous songs and whatnot, whatever. So there was this really, really dramatic storm that flooded everywhere. And a lot of people's, you know, plants, pretty much everything died. And everything was washed out and wiped out. And so what she, like, saw in her vision as she was possibly even dying, I don't really know, but thinking that she might die, she saw that all of her plants, in this oasis land that she has, the seed sanctuary, we're actually holding hands by holding each other's roots. And so I feel like if that all connects back to the community and how we can not just survive, but really thrive, even in desert conditions. This is like what she has is an oasis in a complete desert. You would be surprised at how harsh the land is. And when you arrive at her place, it's just an oasis, and it is really like an analogy for community and what we all need to consider when thinking that, you know, these times are becoming more and more intense and who knows what's going to happen. And then like the anagogics of like a drought in California, and I saw an article that was like rest in peace, California, 1850 to 2016. So like, it's like, we all know this, but what are we doing about it other than, you know, going into our underground bunkers and ordering a bunch of food from Costco and Dunn's Golden Grub? Like, I've been there. But, like, that's really, A, not the world I want to live in. I might as well just go if that's what's going to happen. But, B, like, this is an opportunity for humans to really ask the question, what is a human? And we're a pack animal. And look at what we've destroyed in Montana is the pack animal, the wolf. And so why have they been reintroduced at this auspicious time for us to learn about what is community? And what is community in a quote-unquote American way, which the American way is really independent. We're really independent, especially the people who are settling the West Coast and, you know, settlers, frontiersmen in Montana. Is we have an independence, and without that independence, we would never have gotten here. We would have never weathered, you know, our ancestors, our genetic ancestors would have never weathered, like, you know, the Mississippi and all of these, you know, treacherous land to get to settle these areas, but we did. So how do we be independent in a community?
Well, you know, because I grew up here, I totally get this kind of fierce independence in Montana, but what I also see, because the environment can be harsh here in a different way than in Mexico, there is an interdependence too on in a lot of ways that I don't know, because we haven't been challenged in a while. We haven't seen, I mean, it maybe in Whitefish over the last few years with the economy, you know, there has been this interdependence that we have to join together and we have to, you know, help each other. But, you know, it's sort of a farmer's tradition, a small town tradition that when somebody is struggling, the rest of the community gathers around them and supports them in this time. And that's that, to me, a healthy interdependence instead of codependence, you know, is doing for others what they really can do for themselves. And yet I think, until we're pressed to rely on each other and count on each other and maybe even trust each other, we may not see that kind of community here until we're pushed, because I think there's too much, what's the word when you have more than you need? Well, yeah. Well, because what I get you, what I've heard you say about that community in Mexico is there are a lot of people that are struggling.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's forcing community. Because that's natural. That's when we really need community. I think we have come to the point where we think we don't need community. But, you know, I get people all the time in here who long for community, but they want to do it like from a woo-woo new age kind of thing instead of inclusive, which means everybody. It means the old people. It means the young people. It means the Republicans. It means the Democrats. It means the Catholics. It means the Jews. It means, you know, the Nazis, if there are any here. It means everybody has something to bring to the table. And, yeah, there will be probably, possibly, not necessarily, conflicts over who's going to row the boat, who's going to steer the ship. And yet I kind of think what you were also talking about on your journey is the strength and the power of the women that you're running into, and that they are becoming natural leaders. Would you like to say more about that?
Yeah. We have encountered a lot of women in their later 40s and early 50s. Velvet's dancing right now. And they are very much coming into a lot of power, and they're not doing this forcefully, nor do they even really, I mean, they're at the brink of realizing just how powerful they are. And we've met four women come to mind, and all in that same age range. And it seems to me that with that, there's also a number of young men, early 20s and mid 20s, that are being magnetized to them, and not in like a sexual way, obviously, but in a way that is... That is, the men are craving some sort of direction, I guess you could say, because they have a lot of energy and they have a lot of physical vitality, and they're realizing that there's not a lot of leadership anywhere, especially for our generation. So they're kind of flocking to these women as they come into their power, and it's a beautiful dance to witness.
Well, you were talking, two wonderful men just walked in as we were talking about older women drawing in the men. And look at what happened. But not in an untoward fashion. Would you like to say your name, or you want to be incognito?
Incognito.
Okay. Well, would you like to say your name?
This is Brian.
And what brings you into Rocks and Things today?
Just to witness the show.
Well, we've gone all over talking in many different directions, but we've kind of talked a lot about seeds and community and how plant communities are very metaphoric but also physically representative of strong communities, and how food is a huge part of that. So now we're just talking about Jen meeting all these women that are powerful women, but power in a quiet way. It's not like whips and chains kind of power. No, not at all. And it's not like I was talking to a woman who was a kind of a, you could say a woman of power, but she was trying to be a woman of power in the male system. And she said that there are these women coming into that system with the potential to shift the system, but they're just doing the whole status quo and almost becoming men or becoming too masculine.
I mean, I don't want to get political or anything, but like, look at Hillary Clinton, whatever your politics are, like, she's basically a man. So I think I'm getting what you're saying about how it's like, you know, you either own your both sides. I mean, we're all both, but like, you either own yourself and walk into in your own truth, or you're going to get like almost, I don't know, corrupted by the power that you think is the real power when it's not the real power. And I've seen the difference.
I totally am in agreement. And I think that is what I think it's the opportunity for all of us, whatever sex our terrestrial terminal is, you know, you may be walking as a man or you may be walking as a woman. But I'm guessing, and according to a Native teacher, there are actually 9 sexualities. right? Isn't that right? And so it's not just male or female. And I think what we're coming into is owning whoever you are and being whoever you are, because we were talking about biodiversity and how important biodiversity is. If you are a man that has like a 6 sexualities in you, then we need that. You know, we need transgender people, we need gay people, we need bi, we need hetero, we need the whole continuum, and because it all serves some function that we, I don't think in our little white brain world, under, I don't think we totally understand, you know, that I think some of these indigenous cultures had a handle on before they were also corrupted, because, and that truth we can only find when we're in our hearts. That beats with the heartbeat. It vibrates with our blood. And those mosquitoes, what about those mosquitoes? They go taking blood from one person and giving it to another. Is that the whole mixed rainbow prophecy thing? Sorry, that was a bit divergent. I've heard that's the name of a movie, but sorry. So we got about 4 minutes left. We might just go ahead and wrap this up. My phone actually still has 11% charge. I must be charging my battery instead of draining it today. Jen, any parting words of wisdom?
I'll leave you with a parting thing. We lived with Kitsia. This is the woman we've been talking about. And like Velvet, she would like wake up in the morning and write stories and sing songs. And she just had something to do every single day creatively. And then would, you know, go out into the community and her day would be filled. And so one day she woke up and she was like, I've been up since 4 writing this story. It just came through me, et cetera, et cetera. And she was like, I just don't know how anyone could be bored. There's so much to do. But she didn't say it judgmentally. She just said it like there was the fire in her eyes, like in her heart, like Velvet has. So I just challenge or invite everyone out there to just start doing whatever, something that's in your truth. And that's not, you know, just doing something to do it also, which is a problem in our country, but really just be inspired and just begin to do whatever it is that your heart is calling you to do, because there is so much to do and there is hope for everyone.
There is hope. And I was just learning about the water element today. And the water element is all about faith. So when we have a deficiency of water, whether it's in our environment or in our body, we lose our faith. Our faith in something greater, faith in ourselves. Faith and trust are a little bit different vibrationally. So I know that's another tangent that I just took off on. So keep your water balanced. Keep your fire balanced. Keep the fire in your heart. Yeah, that's right. Okay. follow the women. Say it louder.
Follow the women.
There you go. That's words from our guy who remained, the man who shall remain nameless. Brian, you want to say anything to end it?
Pretty well rounded it out.
Okay, we're zipping off into another dimension now. The dimension that we live here at Rocks and Things is multidimensional, and we are just beginning to understand the depth and the breadth of this world. Okay, here we are, reporting live from planet Earth. Well, signing off. Keep the sunny side. Keep it sunny side up. Okay, is that the way you say that? Okay, we made it. Bye bye.